Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
I'd like to start today's show with a personal request. If you're in the business of organizing an apartment, please reach out to me on Twitter, because my apartment that I just moved into is nothing but boxes and dirt, and I can't keep the place clean. It's driving me nuts. And with that, a hail and hearty hello. I'm Jeff Munn, filling in for Brad Sesmat, ASU women's basketball radio voice. Used to be at the Diamondbacks. You hear me at Mercury games. I used to be at the Suns, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we're glad to be with you on a Friday. It is July 1st. It is, if you want to get technical, it is the start of the second half of the calendar year 2016. It's also, and I think there's probably more than a few people that have noted this, the start of the month where we really start to see football. We'll see it toward the end of the month, but it is July, and training camps will start opening in the NFL toward the end of the month. So if you are a football fan, first of all, you've got something to kind of tie you over a little bit, and we'll get to that in a minute. But this is now, it's starting to get, like, serious here, that your sport is right there, right around the corner. And so, and that's part of what we'll discuss today, but a lot of this show is going to be about the NBA. Yes, it is July 1st. And we will talk about everything right up to the minute with free agency. In fact, we'll get Eric Sorensen in here in a minute to update you on that. Also, Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst, will join us to share his thoughts about where the Suns might go in free agency. Am I bothered by the fact that as we're sitting here now that they haven't made a move on a major free agent? No, because they did what I wanted them to do last Thursday. They got two really good young players. Dragan Bender is going to be a work in progress. He needs to bulk up. It's going to take a little time. Marquese Chriss, love the pick. I have no problem with trading away 28 to get him. Just a fabulous, fabulous move for Ryan McDonough. And we'll get thoughts from Tim on that, the free agent movement, and a lot more. We will also discuss in a moment, provided we have time, we have to move this around, my thoughts about the College World Series. Not so much who won and who lost, but the event itself. Bill Gutekunst will be with us today to share his thoughts about All or Nothing, the video series on Amazon that we'll discuss in a minute, as well as The Purge election year, which, if I count correctly, is the third installment in The Purge series. Mr. Sorensen, am I right about that?
You are.
Okay.
I haven't seen the first two, and I probably won't see the third, but hey, it's a movie-going weekend if you are here in the Valley.
You're not kidding.
And judging from the traffic,
no movie me might go to the movies.
Judging from the traffic yesterday and today,
yeah,
there is no one in Phoenix right now except us and Jared Nielsen.
Right.
Yeah.
And we need to be here
everybody
else.
We're happy to be here. We're just saying there aren't many of us around here on this holiday, holiday weekend.
And I forget sometimes, it's July 1st, and because I was in baseball for such a long time, I forget that Friday the 1st is basically considered to be this year a holiday because the 4th is on Monday. Let's start very quickly with the free agency news that we have, and I'm going to do this, and if I miss anything, Eric, just jump in here. Among the things that have happened since midnight, let's see. Hassan Whiteside says he will return to the Miami Heat. Okay. Has the Joakim Noah deal gone down? Not officially yet, but they apparently are closing in on a 4-year, $72 million deal. The Lakers and Timothy Mozgov agree on a 4-year, $64 million contract. Chandler Parsons has been offered max money by the Blazers. Else we got here? Al Jefferson and the Indiana Pacers, verbal agreement on a 3-year, $30 million deal. And lastly, and the one that kind of jumped out at me, and you've heard that with the salary cap rising, there was going to be a lot of silly money going on flying around NBA clubs this offseason. Well, and again, I don't want to be too critical, but Jeremy Lin, who really, to me, unless I'm wrong, has not done that much the last couple of years in the NBA. He's been on a roster, but I don't remember him having monster games, signed a deal with the Brooklyn Nets today, 3 years, $36 million. Now, Eric Sorensen, I'm going to get you in here. Am I wrong? Has he just been kind of flying under the radar the last couple of years?
He's been an okay player. He's been fine.
He was in Houston last year, if
yeah.
I remember.
He's sort of like, at a different position, Derek Williams, the guy the Suns are kind of kicking the tires on, the former second overall pick who went to U of A.
Right.
He's fine. I mean, he's an adequate bench player, decent NBA player. It's just crazy to see. I mean, like, Mozgov getting $64 million from the Lakers.
Yeah, and I look, the only
more power to
that
all
I'm
these
not,
guys,
I'm
by
not
the way.
More alarmed or angry or enraged about that deal is that the Lakers roster is in such disrepair at the moment that I can live with the idea that they're reaching out and maybe overpaying for a center. 4 years, $64 million is a bit of a reach. Here's the other thing, and I'll just mention this very quickly, and it is this is strange to say about the Lakers, but you see this in baseball a lot. When a team has been down for a while and they want to prove to free agents that they're serious about turning it around, they will overpay sometimes to get a player just to prove to the rest of the market we're serious. Best example is Kansas City 8-9 years ago when Dayton Moore took over as the GM, and it was a long rebuilding process. They went out and signed Gil Mish, a right-handed pitcher, solid, dependable major league pitcher, but they gave him superstar money. And the reason they did it was because they were trying to prove to other free agents that they were serious about winning and they would spend the money to do it. So they basically used Mesh not so much as a guinea pig, but just as an example here. Here's how serious we are. We overpaid for Gil Mish. And maybe that's what's going on with Mozgov to the Lakers. I'm not sure. We'll keep our eyes on it during the show today. Tim Kempton, as I said, will join us to give his thoughts about what has happened, what hasn't happened, what might happen. All or Nothing was released early by Amazon. Were all 8 episodes released early or just a handful?
All eight were up and available as of, I guess, sometime late yesterday afternoon.
Sometime later this month, a Spanish version will be released. And apparently, to compensate for Bruce Arians' colorful language, a cleaned-up version is available as well. I have not seen any of this. I'm not sure I want to see it, not because I don't like the Cardinals. I do like the Cardinals, but I'm not a binge-watch guy. I binge-watched the OJ 30 for 30 thing on ESPN, and I was really upset with myself for doing that because it's like I got better things to do with my time than binge-watch TV shows. But I can understand if people like yourself are going to say, yeah, I'm going to binge watch this weekend, holiday weekend. I'm getting geared up for football. I want to relive what, for the most part, save for that little ending in Charlotte, was a really good season for the Cardinals. But it brings up a more interesting point to me, and I'm sure it's one that's been discussed on the show in the past. And in case I didn't mention earlier, I'm Jeff Munn. I'm in for Brad today, and happy Friday to you. It is amazing to see the transformation of the Cardinals. And you even at the time that Ken Whisenhunt and Rod Graves left, there was still kind of a, I don't want to say incompetency because they had been to a Super Bowl, but there was not the kind of feeling about this organization that there is now. Buttoned down, they've got their act together, they know what they're doing, they're among the elite franchises in the NFL. Steve Keim and Bruce Arians deserve a lot of credit for it. Michael Bidwell does too. And you see the results of this. There was a lot of forward thinking that went into making the deal with Amazon and NFL Films to get this program on and have it be about the Cardinals. I think it's a brilliant move by the organization, and it just furthers the rock star status of Bruce Arians. One other thing, and I'll mention this in passing, and I do want to say something about the College World Series. With the passing this week of Buddy Ryan, I sent out a Twitter message that Buddy Ryan was the first rock star the Cardinals ever had after moving here, maybe ever, in the history of that franchise. And he was hired at a time when Charles Barkley was at his height in popularity with the Suns, and the Cardinals wanted to have a Barkley. And they got one in Buddy Ryan. And Buddy Ryan was Bruce Arians before Bruce Arians in terms of speaking his mind, shooting from the hip, just saying, you know, being unfiltered. The difference is, of course, Buddy Ryan, a defensive guy, Bruce Arians, an offensive guy. But boy, could you imagine Buddy Ryan and Bruce Arians in the same room, what kind of discussion that would have been. Well, it would have been blue, that's for one thing. But you can get to Amazon. You don't have to pay for it. It's right there, All or Nothing. 2-minute commentary on the College World Series. And it's not about the U of A. They did lose. They had a tremendous run. And as a Sun Devil, I'm saying that. And it was great to see for the sake of the Pac-12, which had been kicked around. It was not a good year for Pac-12 baseball, but it's terrific that they were the Big Five conference that was still standing at the end. Coastal Carolina, I can't remember the last time a mid-major won the national championship, but they did. But something that I said this at the beginning of the series, I really wish the powers that be at the NCAA would turn this tournament back into an 18 double elimination tournament. Because right now, as it's constructed, that thing is too long. There were a lot of complaints. Keith Law of ESPN complained vociferously about how Jay Johnson was burning out his pitchers with all the innings they had to throw. Well, part of the reason is because you've got to play through a regional to get to a super regional, which may be three games, and then you get to a 14 double elimination in Omaha just to get to a best of three championship series. That's a lot of baseball. And I don't think it's good for the schools. Arizona was there for 2 weeks. My friend Brian Jeffries, the outstanding radio voice of Arizona Athletics, I don't know what he did. He must have been to the laundromat about 18 times. And it was further delayed by the rainout on Wednesday. But I really think it's, you know, and the crowds were down a little bit, at least for some of the games in this series. I really think it's time for the NCAA to go back and look at the format. That championship series was created for CBS back in the late 80s because they wanted to make certain that they got the championship game. And it wasn't a series. It was a one game. They had the 2-4-team regionals or 2-4-team tournaments, and the winners of both would play one game for the national championship. The reason they expanded it to best of three is there were a couple of years where a team with one loss beat a team with no losses, and they didn't think that was fair. ESPN doesn't care. I mean, they can't possibly be that worried about the thing has to be X amount of days long. Go back to the 18 double elimination tournament. I think it'd be a lot more fun. You get the possibility of playing any one of the other seven teams in the tournament, and you can cut the thing down to 9-10 days. 2 weeks is just too long. I mean, the Olympics is 17 days, and the College World Series almost went that long. It's crazy. Tim Kempton will be along in the next segment. NBA free agency started today, and a lot of interesting moves. And we'll get his thoughts about the draft, too. They went pretty much the way TK wanted them to go. We'll talk with the Suns radio analyst coming up on this Friday. We have Bill Gutekunst, too, and we've got you, and we're mighty appreciative of that here on the Brad Sesmatt Show. We'll be joined momentarily by Suns radio analyst Tim Kempton to talk about NBA free agency. One additional note, this just came in. O.J. Mayo, and I didn't realize O.J. Mayo was still in the league, but he's no longer in the league. The NBA has dismissed him for violating their drug policy, so O.J. Mayo is no longer in the NBA. So that takes care. For those of you who are wondering, it's a 2-year suspension, I should say, about... He was using what is said to be a drug of abuse. So the news on that there. The other thing, I want to just mention this very briefly. I have not been on since the passing of Pat Summitt. And I will just say very quickly, and I know Charlie Turner Thorne was on a couple of days ago, the day of her passing. And just about everything that could be said has been said about Pat Summitt, and rightfully so. The one thing I will tell you is this. If there was anybody in the women's game or a women's coach that I could have seen coaching in the men's game, it was Pat Summitt. Because, and I personally, I would not want to see somebody try to force the idea of women coaching men. It'll happen eventually, but I want it to happen on its own time frame. The thing about Pat Summitt was she commanded so much respect anytime she went in a room. And when Bruce Pearl was let go at Tennessee, or even before he was hired, there was a bit of chatter about why not give the job to Pat Summitt. Now, Summitt, for her part, said, well, why does anybody consider that a step up? Well, okay, and for obvious reasons. But I think Summitt would have worked for this reason, and especially at Tennessee. The first day of practice, she could have walked in to the men's locker room, had an assistant or a staff member behind her pushing a cart with all her NCAA trophies on it, and simply had just said to the Tennessee players, gentlemen, you can do it my way, or I can go back and coach women and pick up some more trophies. It was essentially the kind of speech that Cotton Fitzsimmons gave to the players on the Suns when he, in his second go-round as head coach in 1988. His famous speech went, I don't need this job. I can go back and play golf. So you're either going to do it my way or I'm going to go grab my golf clubs. And it's kind of the same deal. Pat Summitt, I was so pleased to see how many men's coaches in the game, and this is understandable, I'm not shocked at this, were so effusive in their praise of Pat Summitt. Because coaching is coaching. And I can speak from personal experience on this. I've had men's coaches tell me how much they admire Charlie Turner Thorne and the way she coaches up a team and the way she runs a practice. So coaching is coaching. Gender does not really figure into it very much. And I was very glad to see the way men's coaches around the country, the Rick Pitinos, the Mike Krzyzewskis, reacted to the news, because it really isn't about gender. It's about your ability as a coach. And Pat Summitt, I think the debate ended a long time ago about her ability as a coach. We're going to talk a little bit later on in the show about the fact that we are at the halfway point with the baseball season, and in particular the Diamondbacks, and there's an awful lot of questions about that. But again, where we're at with NBA free agency, and we haven't seen the really huge mega free agent signing yet. Obviously, Kevin Durant is meeting with teams, and he's going to continue to meet with teams for a few days. So we wouldn't expect to see anything like that. The Pistons, by the way, signed a former son, Ish Smith. We told you that Hassan Whiteside will return to Miami. What else have we got here? Jordan Clarkson is going back to the Lakers. Nicholas Batum to Charlotte.
Guys to good players. There's no...
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't wake up this morning, and it wasn't like Kevin Durant signing with the Warriors. There was nothing groundbreaking as of yet.
The landscape of the NBA hasn't changed a great deal based on the signings that have taken place. Now, now you mentioned Durant. This is... I'm always amazed when fans get mad at players who sign with teams because they want to win. I get it. I mean, Cleveland was upset with LeBron James for leaving for Miami. But what is it that we are asking of our athletes? Are we asking them to just go cash a big paycheck? No, as fans, we want to see the players, especially in the NBA, put a priority on winning. Starting to sound like Charlie Sheen. And that's exactly what these guys do a lot of times when they sign these deals. Kevin Durant has already got enough money. He's going to sign someplace that he thinks gives him the best chance, and it might be Oklahoma City, will give him the best chance to win an NBA championship during the length of that deal. And how can anybody have a problem with that? I understand why they'll have a problem in Oklahoma City. And OKC, by the way, which has had a nice run as an NBA city, is about to find out, you know, sometimes the road can get a little rocky. There's a pretty good chance Kevin Durant's going to go somewhere else. And he'll come back to Oklahoma City next year wearing another team's uniform. And that's the little part of being a pro sports city that you don't think about too often when the team arrives and the euphoria and, oh boy, let's get our season tickets. That's also the byproduct of winning. Sometimes a player just gets to the point and says, I want to go. But Eric, we talked about this off the air the other day. It always puzzles me why so many people who really don't have a quote unquote dog in the fight get so upset when free agents in a sport, when they get upset with players for leaving to go places where they have a chance to win. You know, what's Herm Edwards' line? You play to win the game. And that's what essentially happens in a lot of these cases. And I guarantee you, Kevin Durant is not going to sign a free agent deal with the Philadelphia 76ers. They don't, you know, he'd make them better, but he's not going to win a championship in Philadelphia. And that's, you know, I don't know why people get so upset about that. The idea is to win games. Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst, joins us now. Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat, and I appreciate him doing this because he's already had a full morning, busy morning. But I was just talking about in the last segment, Tim, that I'm pretty much okay with the fact that we haven't had any earth-shaking news out of the Suns regarding free agency, because the last time you and I talked, we were talking about the draft, and we said, listen, it's time to go young. It would be good to get a free agent to kind of balance out the roster a little bit. But I don't know if I would necessarily want to see the Suns empty the saddlebags just to get a free agent in.
No, Jeff, I agree with you 100%. You know, right now, to me, what the Suns have done lately with their draft picks, you know, obviously with the development of Devin Booker and whatnot, is that, hey, they finally looks like they
We're losing Tim there for a moment. We're going to try
Hello,
to...
Hello, am I there?
There we go.
Sorry,
are you there?
Honey.
Yeah, you faded out for a minute there, my friend.
I apologize. But, you know, free agents in today's day and age, you know, they're looking for big money for long contracts. And right now the Suns are, you know, developing for the future. So if a veteran can come in for the next, you know, 2 or 3 years and help in that development, great. But it's not about him. In this situation, it's about the Suns developing those young guys. So you need a very mature free agent and someone that understands what the plan is from the Suns' point of view.
Okay, so before we get into talking about the other movement with free agency, we haven't talked since the draft. And I will tell you that as things unfolded last Thursday night, when they drafted Bender at 4, I thought, oh, no. You know, I really wanted Marquese Chriss. And then a couple minutes later, comes the word that Sacramento's drafting Chris with the intention of sending him to the Suns. The Suns give up 13 and 28. And immediately I thought they really hit a home run. And I'm sure you see it the same way, because we both agreed they need to get younger players in, and they got two really good ones.
Yeah, I was actually at the Suns draft party, Jeff, and I had a little bit of inside information. I'll tell you, I knew when they did draft Bender, I knew they still had other plans and they were working on a deal, so I was definitely excited. But it was fun being there in that draft party and people kind of having the same reaction you did, you know, with Marquese Chriss and Dragan Bender on the draft board. And a lot of people thought it was one or the other, and the Suns getting both those guys I thought was phenomenal. And then even with the Tyler Ulis pickup in the second round, a kid that has a lot of talent, it's just his physical size that people, you know, have wondered about. And to be able to get him where they did, I think, is a good pickup as well.
There are the same concerns, too, about Bender. He's young, so he's going to fill out a little bit. And obviously Aaron Nelson and his training staff do wonders with players and getting them bulked up and ready to play at the NBA level. So my question is, how long will it take Dragan Bender to get an NBA type of frame?
Oh, it's going to be 2 or 3 years, Jeff. You got to remember, 18 years old, hasn't really been available to the type of workouts and systems that the NBA and professional sports teams have in the NBA, where I still think there's quite a bit of an advantage compared to some of the European systems and what they've got in place. So it's going to be 2 or 3 years, but what the Suns are selling right now, I believe, is that 2 or 3 year plan, as opposed to hell no, we're going to be good, jump on board right now. I think they finally come up with a solid plan, and that's what I'm excited about.
Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst, joining Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat. That's me, by the way, on the Brad Sesmat show. All right, the moves that we've seen so far. And there was a lot of chatter going into free agency that with all the cap room, that some players may get more money than they really should get. Now, I'm going to center on one, and I don't want to be negative about this, but 3 years and $36 million for Jeremy Lin with Brooklyn. I mean, am I wrong, or is this the last couple of years in Houston, has Lin just flown under the radar?
Yeah, and Jeff, I think you have to take it with a grain of salt. It's not really about how good these players are right now. It's just, a timing issue from a standpoint of the salary cap explosion and when guys are guys are one up. And I think the number that we saw this morning is Jeremy Lin is actually making something like $100,000 more a year than Steph Curry at the moment. And so it's really not about the value of the player and his ability in the NBA. All it is a confluence of a lot of circumstances, because we always talk about the top side of the salary cap, but remember in the NBA there's also a floor. They have to spend a certain amount of money on player contracts, and that's what we're seeing happening right now.
I have no problem with the Mozgov signing. 4 years, $64 million may seem a lot for him to go to the Lakers, but with the state of that roster, I don't think it's that bad an idea for the Lakers to invest in a center.
No, not at all. Timofey Mozgov, he definitely fell out of favor in Cleveland, but I always thought he was serviceable. He plays hard, he's smart, he's got good hands, he rebounds well, he finishes around the rim. And they do. They need some bodies. And Timofey Mozgov, and to think about it, I mean, what other top line? Timofey Mozgov is probably down about 6, 7, 8 on the sequence of free agent big men out there. But what other big man is really going to entertain going to the Lakers with the way their roster is made up right now? So I thought it was a good signing for both people.
I also like the Al Jefferson signing with Indiana, and I realize he's at 31 years of age, but I look at it and think, we know he can rebound. If he's got anything left in the tank, and obviously 3 years, $30 million, the Pacers believe he's got a lot left in the tank, that can do nothing but help a team that, to me, when I watch them play this year, they got their fair share of rebounds, but they really couldn't go in and mix it up inside the way they needed to.
Yeah, the one thing about Al Jefferson is he can score. He's got a lot of moves around the basket. He's got great hands. He can put it in the bucket. You worry about him, on the perimeter trying to play pick and roll defense, but Al Jefferson can score the ball, and that's something that Indiana had struggled with is keeping pace with teams in just on the scoreboard. Now Al Jefferson gives him a low post presence. With a couple of outside shooters, now you have a little bit more of an open floor.
The other news, and I didn't get to this in the first segment, but Paul Coro of AZ Central reported this morning that Earl Watson's filling out his coaching staff, and among others, is bringing aboard the former Sun, former Jazz head coach, former interim head coach in Sacramento, Ty Corbin, to his staff, along with former Toronto coach Jay Triano. I think it's a great move because a guy who's still learning and growing as a coach gets to surround himself with guys who have been through it and can guide him along. I think it's a tremendous move on Earl Watson's part, especially with Ty Corbin.
Yeah, I think so. Your staff is a reflection of yourself quite a bit of the time. And for people that don't know, Jay Triano, very successful coach, he's Canadian, was involved in their national program for a couple of years and the whatnot. So yeah, I liked it. I like his coaching staff as well. He's going to need to lean on them at times, and that's what I think he can do with these guys. Obviously, Tyrone Corbin and Jay Triano, both with head coaching experience in the league, so it helps Earl Watson where he's probably weakness, and it builds on his strengths as well.
Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst, joining us. Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat. All right, let's look at another wrinkle to the Suns' offseason plans, and that's trades. They clearly still have a surplus at guard. What can they do? And I guess the better question is, with one of those surplus guards, and there's certain guys you know they're not going to trade away, but with the ones that they might take calls on, what can they reasonably expect to get back?
Well, here's the question I would ask you, Jeff. We just touched on Jeremy Lin and
right,
what he's getting, and you look at the salaries that the Suns are guarding. The Suns guards are making right now. I almost flip it back to you and say, well, they're on pretty friendly contracts. Don't just make a trade to make a trade, but how about communication? Let's see Earl Watson work with these guys, show them, how they can work together. because, you know, Brandon Knight, Eric Bledsoe are pretty talented. We've seen the talent of Devin Booker. We want to see that progress. Ronnie Price, what do you do with Ronnie Price? You know, because you drafted a Tyler Ulis. I think they're going to rely quite a bit on the Northern Arizona Suns, the D-League team, which is right up in Prescott now, and putting some of those younger players, such as Tyler Ulis, up there, maybe even Bender and Chris to get them some minutes at times. So with the way everything's going right now, you know, would a trade help out with the numbers? It might, but not making a trade may help out in the long run, because we've seen how injuries have affected this lineup as well. So if they can communicate to those guys and get them all on the same page per se, do you want to keep those guys, because they're both very good on pretty favorable contracts?
Should be an interesting couple of weeks. Tim, appreciate it. We rushed to get you on short notice. I really appreciate you doing it. I'll see you down the road, pal. Thanks for being with us.
All right, Money. Great talking to you, bud.
Same here. Tim Kempton, Suns radio analyst, a wealth of great information about the NBA, and I love just listening to him talk basketball. And the news will keep kind of flowing out of the Suns, so it's going to be a very interesting summer, say the least, going into training camp. We're at the halfway point of the baseball season. And some thoughts about the D-backs and a few things about baseball in general when we get back on the Brad Sesmatt Show on a Friday, and we're glad you're with us. The Brad Sesmatt Show on a Friday. Jeff Munn for Brad. Hope you had a nice holiday weekend planned. A lot of you, your holiday weekend has already started. And isn't that a great thing? July 1st, on this date, let me do the math real quick. 6 years ago today, the Diamondbacks dismissed Josh Burns as general manager, A.J. Hinch as field manager, and hired Kirk Gibson to manage the club. Jerry DePoto finished out the year as the interim general manager. You kind of know how the story goes from there. We are at the halfway point because the Diamondbacks have played 81 games. Let me just double check, make sure I got my math right. 81. And they are 36-45. They are 14 games out in the West. They open a series tonight, by the way, with the Giants, who are in first place with 50 wins on the year. And just scanning through here very quickly, Texas is 51 wins, the Cubs 51, the Giants at 50. The Giants are better than I thought they would be at this point. I mean, they have been red hot. They beat Oakland last night 12-6. They have had some pretty serious injury problems, but still, this is a team that, boy, it's really interesting to see how well they have performed. And a lot of it just goes to the pitching.
Speaking of the Giants.
And
dot,
speaking
dot, dot.
Of the Giants, let's transition to talking about the Diamondbacks for a minute. And I take it from this, I know a lot has been made the last couple of days about the home record. And how could this team be 13-28 at home? Well, I'm going to confess, and you're probably aware of this, I have not been at home games this year. I just haven't. So I can't tell you with my own eyes what's going on. And even if I could, is there really a tangible reason as to why a team is 13-28 at home? I don't think so. Obviously, there are a variety of reasons why a team is not successful in a given circumstance. And with the Diamondbacks, one of them is the relief pitching. Wednesday is a prime example. They had an 8-5 lead after seven innings. Phillies tie the game, eventually win it in extra innings. There have been concerns with the bullpen all year, whether they're at home or on the road. But just in terms of playing the game of baseball, aside from the fact that you are not sleeping in your own bed and you bat first in an inning, there isn't that much difference between playing at home as opposed to playing on the road. I just don't have an explanation for you as to why they could be 13-28, but they are. And Paula Bovin of AZ Central, who occupies the chair to my right quite often, came out or did a little research on numbers. The home winning percentage for the D-backs is a potential major league worst since 1901. Their 31.7% win percentage ranks 2,428th out of 2,452 team seasons. Incidentally, The Braves' current home winning percentage of 27.3 ranks as potentially the fifth worst ever.
I mean, when you talk about bad, we all thought it was bad. But before you and I saw Paula's tweet,
right.
I don't think either of us thought it was that bad.
And I have no explanation. This is not, you can't point at something really tangible and say, this is why.
No.
Although, obviously, as I said, the struggles of the bullpen.
Well, now, and there's also issues with the Diamondbacks. Like, the Diamondbacks always, not their fault, but they always face the issue in the summer of getting butts in the seats because it's 350 degrees and most of the valley scatters from June until the end of July, middle of August. Now you have the combination of not only are people not going, but the product on the field isn't good. So not only are they hurting, I would think, in the standings, but with everything else that goes along with home games, concessions, parking, right, blah, 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 the financial side, I'm sure, is taking a beating too.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. And the other thing is a great many of the draws on their schedule have come and gone. The Cubs, I don't think, come back.
I don't believe so.
The Yankees have been here.
Yep.
So is there a huge draw? Now, they'll get a great crowd Monday night, and they should, for the 4th of July. There are several giveaway nights, which always do well.
Yeah, the Goldschmidt bobblehead night, I believe, is tomorrow. And
right.
You combo that with the Giants, that'll probably attended game.
It'll do well. Now, this leads to a question as they sit. They are 14 games out, as I said, in the West. I think, you know, obviously that means trying to win the West is pretty much a done deal. It's not going to happen. They are 6.5 out of the second wild card. And you're starting to hear a little chatter about a couple of things, and I'm going to touch on them both very quickly. Number one, trades. I really think Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart will wait it right down to July 31st before deciding whether they're buyers or sellers. They want to give this team every chance to try to get on a run. Because, among other things, you've got to think that Shelby Miller will start to straighten himself out here pretty soon. There is the prospect, and I know Derek Hall was on the show earlier this week, that A.J. Pollock will be back playing before the season is over. So there's a chance that this team could get back to a point where they kind of thought they were going to be on paper at the start of the year. If that's the case, a run is something that is possible. So I think they will wait until the last possible second. If there was going to be a deal, my guess is one of the relief pitchers, Brad Ziegler, Daniel Hudson, would be players that there would be a lot of calls on. I'm not saying they would do a deal because Dave Stewart has said they'd be interested in locking up Hudson and Ziegler on multi-year deals sometime soon. But if there was going to be interest, it would be from there. By the way, real quick before we go to a break, they are not letting go of Chip Hale. Reason, among other reasons, there's a lot of them, but one of the ones that doesn't get talked about a lot, how in the world would they ever convince a big-time manager to come here next year after giving Chip Hale a year and a half? That would just scare off a big-name manager. You're not going to do it. And it's not Chip's fault. We're going to go to the movies with Bill Gutekunst coming up next on the Brad Sesmak Show. It's time to go to the movies, and boy, this is a big weekend for the movies. On the 4th of July, Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central Gannett, chief film and media critic, joins us. We're going to start by talking about the All or Nothing series, which all 8 episodes have now been released on Amazon Video. And there's been a lot of talk about it just in terms, I guess, Bill, most of the chatter centers on the fact that here is a really well-done documentary, and it's being made available on Amazon, which is kind of, to a lot of media people, is a signal of the NFL's growing interest in streaming. Is that kind of, to you, is that the top story involved with this film?
I don't know. I mean, that's one of them. I think that streaming is not the future, it's the present, and it's the immediate past. And that's just who they happen to make the deal with. I think that you're going to see a lot of these things. I mean, if you just look at Amazon has, and Hulu both have, some really good TV series, like dramatic and comedy series, that you can only get through streaming. You know, you don't watch them on television unless you hook up your computer to your TV. It's just sort of a fact of life, and I kind of like it. I mean, I got an advanced copy, so I didn't watch it in the streaming way. But if I had, I could have done the same thing. Just sat there and watched it till it was done. If I like, you know, watch a half hour. If I don't like it, I'm done. If I like it, hey, I'll try another one, you know?
Let me ask you this very quickly. The All or Nothing kind of reminds you of Hard Knocks. Obviously, it goes into the regular season. And in fact, Michael Bidwell, I heard in an interview, said we actually started filming during the draft in 2015.
Before the draft.
Right. Is that the major difference? I mean, in terms of the kind of access, is there a greater access in this film than fans even get through Hard Knocks?
I would say that there is. I mean, they go into Arian's home. They go into some of the players' homes. They do a lot of, they're in the meetings and they do that in Hard Knocks. I would say the access is terrific, and you've got the NFL Films who mic everything during the season, and you get a lot of stuff. What you get that I think is pretty cool is if you've ever wondered what Arians was saying to somebody when he was yelling at him on the sidelines, and you wondered, does he really cuss or anything? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
and you get to hear it. I think the access was great. The one quibble I have with the thing is I'm not especially thrilled with what they did with it. This is a very good, a feel-good movie. I mean, it's an NFL production, NFL Films production, but it's very heroic. Everybody, nobody ever argues, nobody ever disagrees, nobody ever fights. Now, Arians will yell at somebody if they make a mistake, but he's quick to come back and tell them how much he loves them. My friend Will Leach, who started the site Deadspin and now works for a lot of players, he reviewed it and he called it NFL Pravda. And I think that there's some truth to that. However, that doesn't make it any less enjoyable. But when you call it behind the scenes, I think that makes you think it's going to be something that's really not. It's just kind of a really enjoyable look at the season. But it was a great season, so what's not to enjoy?
And I'm going to get to the film we want to talk to in a minute, but just a quick thought, because I know you were here in Phoenix at that time. When I hear these people talk about Bruce Arians and his outspokenness and this and that, it automatically reminds me, and it did before the events of this week, it reminds me of Buddy Ryan. And I've said to people, Buddy Ryan was Bruce Arians before Bruce Arians. Results were a little different, but in terms of making headlines by talking, it was pretty much the same.
It was, but the results forgive a lot. When I was in high school, I played high school football against Gary Clark. And listen, if you can hear that, he cracked my jaw. He played for a rival team.
Oh.
Believe it or not, I caught more passes than Gary Clark did in high school. He was more of a defensive back then. But he came here to the Cardinals. He was making $200 a year. $2 million a year. And Buddy Ryan said to the press, not to Gary Clark, he said, I told him he's either going to take a 50% pay cut or 100% pay cut. Doesn't matter to me. That, to me, always was sort of the way that Buddy Ryan did business.
Yeah, and as I say, there is a similarity in the sense that both men very unfiltered. The Purge election year is the third in the Purge installment. And I did hear another reviewer today say it's not the best of the three. What's your take on it?
That's like saying, malaria is not as bad as cancer. It has some interesting ideas. The whole idea of the series is interesting, this sort of right-wing government has taken over the U.S. So for 12 hours during the night, one day a year, all crime is legal, including murder. And, of course, murder appears to be the only crime anybody ever commits. They're not out there, stealing hamburgers or anything. In this one, the thing is changed a bit because it's an election year. And one of the candidates, who is a woman with blonde hair, is running against a right-wing candidate who really doesn't like anybody different being in government or in life, really. And the woman who is running wants to get rid of the Purge. The other guy wants to keep it at all costs, because the part of this movie that is fairly political is the reason the Purge really exists is to get rid of all the poor and minority people, because they're the ones who get killed the most, and to drum up business for the NRA. So it's sort of interesting. You think, wow, that's kind of an interesting setup. And then like about 10 minutes after that, it's like, boom, we're just going to start killing people. That's it.
Well, maybe it's the kind of fare that people will go for this weekend, given that it's a holiday weekend and you want to get in out of the heat. All right. As I always do this whenever, and I'm looking to Eric to make certain that we're not blowing the clock out of proportion. There's been a trend in television. And I want to get your thoughts on it, because I'm certain that you're aware of it and have probably watched it. One of these, it's I can't think of the term, but over-the-air stations in Phoenix have kind of a subcarrier channel that is carried on cable systems, and one of them carries this network called Antenna TV. And somewhere around the first of the year, Antenna TV started showing The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. They got a deal with the Johnny Carson people to get a lot, 70s and 80s shows, including the 90-minute shows in the 70s. And I read an article in the Chicago Tribune. It's the Tribune company that runs this network. And they said, it'll be really interesting to see how Carson does against Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel. Have you heard any chatter as to how those reruns are doing?
I haven't, but I can't imagine that they do that well. I mean, they may do well locally, but it's more of a local thing, right? I mean, that network doesn't, all carriers don't have it and that sort of thing. So it's going to be parceled out. But I would imagine that in some, I mean, often, you know, where it works out that way, Jeopardy does better than a primetime show or something.
You know, yeah.
People like different things. But I think with the boomer audience, and they, it's a great idea, and everybody loves Johnny. I mean, you will never hear anybody say a crossword about Johnny Carson. You'll hear David Letterman say that, you know, he's the reason he did that, you know, and you'll hear Jay Leno say that, and you'll hear all those guys say that Carson was the gold standard. I personally would throw my vote in for Letterman, but Carson's great.
I agree with you. I agree with you. The thing that I find interesting about, you would think that the comedy wouldn't hold up, that so much of the monologue that Carson did was topical, and that it may not stand the test of time. As a consumer, I find a lot of nights, and maybe it's because of my age, that I get the joke, and I don't get into, well, gee, that's a 40-year-old joke, or that's a story from 40 years ago. The comedy, to me, holds up incredibly well.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with him. I mean, they were smart jokes to begin with. They were topical, but they were about big events. You know, I mean, he really sort of captured what was going on in the country, and he just had that delivery that just, like, he was one of those guys that he was in your bedroom every night. You really felt like you knew the guy. In real life, he's kind of like Letterman. Nobody knew him. You know, he's intensely private. You know, nobody hung out with him. But you felt like, and maybe this is why that these guys acted that way, but you felt like you really did know the guy. And you were comfortable seeing that. And I think you hear those jokes, and it's kind of like an old relative or friend you haven't seen in a while, and they come back and they start talking about, yeah, remember that time we did this? And you like it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Next time we do this, we'll talk about those ABC Sunday night game shows. I guess they did really well in the ratings the first week, and I don't know how. we'll save that for another day. Bill, appreciate it. Have a nice holiday weekend.
Thanks.
Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic. Two of the shows on ABC, Celebrity Family Feud and the $100,000 Pyramid, both finished in the top 10 in the ratings last week. I get it with Family Feud, Steve Harvey, all that stuff. The $100,000 Pyramid, did anybody watch that? Michael Strahan is not Dick Clark. He's not Donny Osmond. It just, to me, it just doesn't work. And I'm not surprised that Match Game didn't do well, because I've said it before. Alec Baldwin cannot host that show. He is trying to be the punchline. You can't do a show like that and be the punchline. You have to set up the punchline. So it wore me out to watch it. Anyway, I'm glad that the other shows are doing well. A lot going on today. It's Friday of a holiday weekend. You got the NBA, you got the NFL, you got Major League Baseball. Boy, you better stick around here, because if you want to know what's going on, sports360az.com, azcentral.com, this is the place to be. And this show is where you get a lot of that info, too, the Brad Sesmatch Show.